So we're continuing to read from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 24, verse 39, the chapter is entitled Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva. Sarvasatvatma Dehaya Visheshaya Stavisyase Namastrailokya Palaya Sahajo Valaya Cha Sarva All Sattva Existence Atma Soul Dehaya Unto the body Visheshaya Diversity Staviyase Unto the material world
Namaha
Offering obeisances Trailokya Three planetary systems Palaya Maintainer Saha
Along with
Ojaha Prowess
Balaya
Unto the strength Cha
also
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki My dear Lord, You are the gigantic universal form which contains all the individual bodies of the living entities. You are the maintainer of the three worlds, and as such You maintain the mind, senses, body, and air of life within them. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto You. Purport. As the individual body of the living entity is composed of millions of cells, germs, and microbes, the universal body of the Supreme Lord similarly contains all the individual bodies of the living entities. Lord Shiva is offering His obeisances to the universal body, which includes all other bodies, so that everyone's body may fully engage in devotional service. Since this individual body is composed of senses, all the senses should be engaged in devotional service. For instance, the smelling instrument, the nose, can engage in smelling the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. The hands can engage in cleansing the temple of the Lord, etc. Indeed, being the life air of every living entity, the Lord is the maintainer of the three worlds. Consequently, He can induce every living entity to engage in his real life's duty with full bodily and mental strength. Thus, every living entity should serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his prana, life, artha, wealth, intelligence, and words. As is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10.12.35, Etavash janma sapalyam dehinam iha dehishu praner arter diyavachaha shreya acharanam sada. Even though one may desire to engage in the service of the Lord, without sanction, one cannot do so. Lord Shiva is offering his prayers in so many different ways in order to show living entities how to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanagyana Shalakaya Shakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Just to encourage us, I'm going to read the verse just before the last verse of this chapter, which is encouraging to go on reading these pastimes. It says as follows: A devotee who rises early in the morning and with folded hands chants these prayers sung by Lord Shiva and gives facility to others to hear them certainly becomes free from all bondage to fruitive activities. So we can see that to hear and to recite these prayers is a very, very elevated activity, especially early in the morning and with folded hands, in other words, with a prayerful mood. So I thought that in the beginning of this of the translation, this reference, Lord Shiva makes reference of the gigantic universal form. So we know in the Bhagavad Gita there's a whole chapter dedicated to the description of the universal form and how Arjuna requests Krishna to manifest his form. And I wanted to read one verse from that chapter, which gives a summary of, in a very similar mood to what we're reading today. It's the fourth verse of chapter 11, which says, "If you think that I'm able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that ultimate, unlimited universal self." Purport: it is said that one can neither see, hear, understand, nor perceive the Supreme Lord, Krishna, by the material senses. But if one is engaged in loving transcendental service to the Lord from the very beginning, then one can see the Lord by revelation. This is a word that is very much used in other religious traditions. Every living entity is only a spiritual spark. Therefore, it is not possible to see or to understand the Supreme Lord. Arjuna, as a devotee, does not depend on his speculative strength. Rather, he admits his limitations as a living entity and acknowledges Krishna's inestimable position. Arjuna could understand that for a living entity, it is not possible to understand the unlimited infinite. If the infinite reveals himself, then it is possible to understand the nature of the infinite by the grace of the infinite. The word Yogeshwara is also significant, very significant, because the Lord has inconceivable power. If he likes, he can reveal himself by his grace, although he is unlimited. Therefore, Arjuna pleads for the inconceivable grace of Krishna. He does not give Krishna orders. Krishna is not obliged to reveal himself unless one surrenders fully in Krishna consciousness and engages in devotional service. Thus, it is not possible for persons who depend on the strength of their mental speculations to see Krishna. So, very similar to the purport of today's verse, in which Srila Prabhupada concludes by saying that even though one may desire to engage in the service of the Lord, without sanction one cannot do so. So it's very clear that one may desire to see the universal form, one may desire to be engaged in devotional service, but unless Krishna gives his blessings, grace, sanction, authorization, some or other, we will be impeded from that. So there's many different points, very, very interesting points, which are brought in this verse and purport. One is that, of course, that in the translation it's mentioned that Krishna, Vishnu, is a maintainer. He's the one who maintains all the three worlds, and he also maintains the minds of every living entity, the senses, the body, and the air life. So he maintains the biggest elements in this world, the planets, all the cosmic manifestation, but he also maintains the smallest elements, each living entity. He maintains their mind, their senses, their body, and their air, life air. So only Vishnu can do that. It is such a difficult task to maintain. We can see that to be able to maintain every single aspect of the universe at any given moment, and even take care of emergencies when they happen, because regularly there's some emergencies, there's some conflict or some disturbance to the balance, to the maintenance plans of the Lord, and he has to take care of the regular maintenance plus the emergencies, and only Vishnu can do that. We know, of course, that Lord Brahma, he creates, which is a very difficult task. He had to perform austerities for such a long time to get the inspiration to be able to create the universe according to the desire of the Lord, based on previous creations. And Lord Shiva has the duty to destroy, which is also quite a big job. But to maintain, only the Lord can do that, because it requires this, very, very be available and involved in every little aspect of the universe. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada compares the universal body with our own bodies, and we think it's quite simple. We have a body, senses, and parts of the body, etc. But here Srila Prabhupada mentions that, the body is composed, of course, we know, of millions and millions of cells, and millions of microbes and bacteria, and all these things that are causing a lot of trouble in the world today, all these viruses and things. So there's a lot of, you know, millions of aspects to this body, just like there's so many different aspects to the universal form. So Srila Prabhupada makes this comparison, and he talks about the gross body, the gross elements, and the subtle elements. Who can make a little list of the gross elements that are mentioned here, but also that we know from reading so many times Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita? What are the gross elements that Krishna is always supplying and also maintaining that we very much need?
Earth.
Yes, earth, water, fire. Earth in what form? Because, you know, we like to walk on the earth, but, you know, we need earth in the form of food, yeah. We need a lot of grains and fruits and vegetables and all these things, so that's also part of the earth element. And, you know, Krishna gives us so many gross elements to make our life pleasant in this world, in this universe. Of course, rain is so important. We just had a nice freshening this morning, a lot of rain to clear up the atmosphere, freshen up, and give a lot of life to the vegetables. Then, you know, flowers, he's mentioning in the purport about scents, the nose, the sense of smell. And many others like air, heat, wind, all these elements that we need for our subsistence. So Krishna is supplying all the gross elements, but he's also supplying all the subtle elements. All the gross elements are to satisfy our senses, you know, for sense gratification, in accordance to the regulative principle. But he's also supplying, you know, he's also taking care of the subtle elements, you know, all the, like the mental equilibrium, that we don't become insane, so that there's balance in the mind, and you know, so he's supplying all these mental subtle elements, the life air, that the life airs are balanced. If the life airs don't work properly, then we become sick, we can't function, so we need to go to a doctor, somebody to help us. But in general, our life airs are under control, which is quite amazing, because, you know, it's a whole very sophisticated process that at every moment the life airs are in balance and we can go on with life and breathe and, you know, etc. And then there's, of course, the mental states. You know, we know if we become mentally disturbed to a very extreme case, then we become mentally, you know, unbalanced, and we can't function either. So there's a lot of subtle elements that Krishna is also keeping, maintaining in each living entity throughout the whole universe. Also the intelligence, he's constantly giving us intelligence, how to do things, you know, intelligence to just survive in this world. Without that intelligence, we wouldn't be able to survive. And also intelligence to make spiritual progress. If we really have spiritual desire, Krishna will give us intelligence to continue in our spiritual path. But even just for the maintenance, we see that the insects, even the smallest living entities, Krishna is giving constantly the intelligence what to do and what not to do, how to, you know, to survive in this world. So Krishna is very busy. He has a lot of work, giving so much support to the living entities in this world. And, you know, if we lose this intelligence, this discrimination, then we become many times illusioned. And if our mind is disturbed, we can't concentrate, we lose our determination, we can't meditate, we can't, you know, focus our mind on devotional activity. So all these things are very important for our spiritual life and for our material well-being or subsistence. And also we can see from the purport that, you know, from the Srila Prabhupada's beginning of the purport, how insignificant we are, because, you know, he compares our individual body in some ways to very, you know, germs and cells. Like, you know, germs and cells compared to us, they're like so insignificant, we're not aware of them at all. But the difference is that we don't reciprocate with these very small, you know, elements that are within our body, that are part of our body. But Krishna, he's reciprocating with every living entity. So that shows the uniqueness of Krishna, that, you know, though we're so insignificant in regards to him, you know, Imagine a microbe of a cell, you know, what does that, you know, what does that make for the body, you know, for us. So for Krishna, you know, we're like that, very insignificant, but still he's very much concerned and trying to, you know, facilitate all our, you know, he's facilitating all our needs, all our desires, and that's a lot of work. And he doesn't ignore us, he doesn't think we're insignificant, he's, you know, giving a, you know, he's taking care of us like a loving father, like a friend, and he's reciprocating with all our desires, whether they be material or spiritual. If we have spiritual desires, he's going to reciprocate with those spiritual desires. If we just have material desires, he tries to fulfill according to everybody's karma, he tries to fulfill everybody's material desires. So he's very much engaged with the living entities in reciprocation, in loving reciprocation, if we want to love Krishna. So we, you know, we're quite important because he's giving us so much attention for him. And then Srila Prabhupada speaks about the engagement of the living entity, and then of course he gives some example of the smelling and the cleaning of the temple, and then obviously he says that indeed, he says that the living entity, you know, he's, in order to be engaged in devotional service, we need the sanction of the Lord. And for us, it's very simple, you know, we're not so elevated that, you know, we might get so much the sanction of the Lord for our devotional practices. But Srila Prabhupada has made things very easy for us to be fully engaged by following spiritual sadhana and spiritual activities that engages a lot of our time and senses and energy, intelligence, you know, to be able to listen, to be able to smell, as we heard, the flowers offered to Krishna and taste prasadam, but also in the form of different services. You know, we all have different services that we perform in our devotional life, and that keeps us quite engaged, quite busy. But there's still another element, you know, even if we're trying very hard to plead, to serve the deities and do so much service in the temple and be strict with our sadhana, there's still one element which is very much recommended for all of us in order to be really sure that we're making progress, that we're satisfying Krishna and the previous acharyas, and that we keep ourselves also very happy and blissful. What is that? Chanting, of course, yes, sadhana. And chanting and service, yeah, we mentioned service, but there's one thing that we recommend everybody to do. Prasadam? Yes, prasadam is also very important. I was thinking of preaching, you know, preaching in the form of going out of our way a little bit of our normal service, our normal responsibilities, our normal sadhana. Because preaching, what does it mean? Is we, you know, we do something extra. We you know, we go out of our way to please the previous acharyas, to please Lord Chaitanya, and, you know, either distribute the holy name to others, either talk to people. Like, you know, we get so many visitors, but sometimes we become a little bit mechanical. You know, we go on with our life. We see the visitors walking by, and we don't, many times we don't even say hello or speak with them. But, you know, to take some time, okay, we're busy, that's quite clear, we're busy, we have our services, that's okay. But to actually take the time often to preach to guests, to go out on Harinam, to do some preaching activity program, will keep us very enlivened, kind of fine-tune our spiritual life, and will make us happy also, because, you know, if the previous acharyas are happy, if Lord Chaitanya is happy, then we'll become even more happy than what we are. If we're very steady in our services in the temple and sadhana, we'll become even more happy. So I think preaching is like that extra element that will make our engagement, our service, even more complete and perfect. To take the time to take the time to do some preaching activity. And, you know, there's so many opportunities. Even here, just take a few minutes sometimes and talk to people. You know, just, I'm sure everybody has questions, they like to associate with devotees, so we need to, you know, take a little bit of time to do that. And especially on Harinams, when we have large Harinams planned that you can go out once or twice a year or three times a year, you don't miss the Maha Harinams. These are very enlivening experiences for ourselves and we are distributing the holy name, so Lord Chaitanya becomes very pleased. And that will keep our spiritual life fine-tuned, and our enthusiasm and determination going on. But the program that Srila Prabhupada established is complete. There's nothing lacking. But still, as we see, we need to have that sanction of the Lord. We cannot say that we can impose ourselves. So actually, Krishna, as it mentioned in the purport, Krishna can engage everyone in devotional service, but he's waiting for, and he wants to see our desire increase. He wants to see also that we pray for his support, for his help, and for his protection. And in this way he reciprocates, and then the whole relationship begins. So it's not that Krishna wants to, force us to serve him, because it's very easy for him. He's controlling our life affairs, he's controlling everything. We can't do much without his sanction. But still, in order to perform devotional service, there's an element of surrender, of praying, of desire, wanting to have it. And Krishna sometimes tests us and makes this desire increase. We have to wait for some time before we can actually serve him. We might be hampered one way or another to perform service. So he wants to see our love, our feelings that we have for him. And in this way he reciprocates and helps us to engage in his service. And many times we're afraid of distress. The living entities, we very much try to avoid distress. But we hear from the very advanced devotees that they welcome distress. Like Kunti Devi, she was asking for distress because by experiencing distress, her dependency and her prayers and her desires to serve Krishna and to think of Krishna were intensified. While we might not have that attitude, we might want to have very relaxed and easygoing kind of life. But distress can be sometimes an impetus to really get closer to Krishna and pray. So we shouldn't see it as a negative thing. Distress can be something that helps us in our devotional life. And usually Krishna gives small doses of distress so that we don't freak out too much. Otherwise, if it's too much distress, then we might drop the whole thing. So he knows our capacity to handle distress. But we shouldn't think that it's negative in itself. It could be very helpful in our spiritual life. So devotional service is our real life duty, and to serve the deities and the mission of the previous acharyas is our hope, our desire, our goal. But we also have our material responsibilities. Many of us have families to take care of. We have activities we perform in society. So the combination of this varnashram and devotional service is a perfect combination. To follow certain rules and regulations in our life and take certain responsibilities, but always keep the devotional process going on to the point where material life diminishes so much that it becomes in the background. Usually when you're young, material life is prominent and spiritual life is a little bit on the back burner or not so prominent. But if we continue our spiritual life in a serious way, then material life goes to the background, and then spiritual life becomes more and more prominent. And that's the beauty of spiritual life, is that when you're old, you have so much nectar because you can absorb so easily in devotional practices, in chanting, hearing, and worshipping the deities and associating. It's not difficult, it's not bothersome, because the whole life you've been developing that. So we have to cultivate our desire to serve Krishna throughout our whole life, and at the same time take care of our material obligations and responsibilities. That is very much there. So I think I'll stop here, because Srila Prabhupada, he talks a little bit also about what things, you know, we can offer in, as living entities, you know, in service. He talks about offering our artha. So some of us have some wealth, some karma, some good karma. We can offer that to Krishna. That's one service we can render. To offer one's life, that's like more powerful. To offer one's life here means to offer all our being to Krishna. To offer our intelligence, you know, we all have some intelligence, some are more intelligent, some less intelligent, but we all have some intelligence, and if we offer that intelligence to Krishna, then we can serve nicely, we can offer something to Krishna, because all intelligence can be used in Krishna's service, and we can, you know, plan things and do things for Krishna using our intelligence. And of course our words, that's what I was mentioning before, that we also should try to use our words for Krishna by taking some time for preaching and speaking about Krishna to those who are maybe not knowing so much, or who are new, or who are less advanced than us, or who need some inspiration. So we can always use our words to serve Krishna. And then ultimately, you know, as it's mentioned here, you know, we can't do anything without Krishna's sanction. You know, we are very much depending on Him. So, you know, we have to try our best, try hard, but always knowing very well that, you know, without Krishna's sanction, there's not much we can do. You know, it, you know, we might make a lot of noise and things, but it's just a lot of noise, that's all it is. Well, if Krishna gives that sanction, then it becomes a song. It becomes beautiful and pleasing to everyone, pleasing to Him. So we have to be eager to try to get this sanction from the Lord to serve Him, to get His blessings, His grace. And this chapter is so beautiful because I think, you know, it's being quoted by different personalities, the songs sung by Lord Shiva. So it's very the intimate Shiva. It's the Shiva that is glorifying Krishna with such beautiful, you know, words, philosophy, poetry, and we should cherish it very much because it's really, you know, very intimate. How Lord Shiva is describing Lord Krishna's position and his all his qualities. It goes on and on for, it's quite a long chapter. So are there any comments or questions on the few points that we discussed? It's 10:22:35.
Yeah, what's the past time you mentioned it?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. Somebody knows? It's from Krishna's pastime, I guess. 10th canto. 10:22:35. You can check it up when you get back to your rooms. It's quoted in Sanskrit, but there's no description. Except himself.
So, how is possible this vision to see that everyone is a devotee? Because sometimes I feel that if somebody do some strange things or commit an offense, I think, oh, this is not a devotee. So I'm not a Uttama Adhikari for sure. But how is possible to see that everyone is a devotee?
Well, just like Krishna, he sees like that. So those who are very advanced, very close to Him, Uttamadhikaris, very special souls, they are empowered by Krishna to also have that vision. Because Krishna sees, you know, He has a transcendental vision. He doesn't, you know, He doesn't see all the, I mean, He sees it, but He doesn't get disturbed by that. So the living entity who is at the highest level of realization can also see that everybody's actually a devotee, but you know, going through some purification, some karma, some spiritual process like that. So how it works, then you would have to ask Nuttam Adhikari. He might give you some realization, but you know, in our movement, we're very much focusing on Madhyam platform, which is very exalted. If steady Madhyam platform is a very exalted platform, because you know there's so many different levels also of Madhyam, of preaching devotees. So the whole Krishna consciousness movement is a preaching movement. So that is a very exalted platform to have, to be able to be steadily on the Madhyam platform for one's whole life or for the rest of one's life. And Uttam Adhikari, you know, that's something which is obviously very rare, and we hear it in the scriptures, so that's very, you know, and we have some examples of devotees who, you know, grace us with their presence, Uttam Adhikaris. But you know, we shouldn't make it something cheap or you know, strive for it artificially or talk about it too much artificially, because it's not an artificial phenomenon. It's something very exalted and very much connected with Krishna. So we can be happy by hearing it about it in the scriptures, and knowing that there are devotees who are Uttam Adhikaris. That's encouraging. But for us to try to come to the platform of Madhyam is quite a struggle already, and to maintain that in a steady way is a big challenge, and it's like a life mission, I would say. If one can be Madhyam, you know, for the rest of one's life, that's like, whew, that's a big achievement. Uttama, and we shouldn't be so much concerned about Uttama Adhikari. Yeah, that's what Lord. Yeah, that's what he's saying. Yeah, that's like. Yeah, but just like we have, of course, we have desire, but we also have free will to desire one thing or desire something else. So Krishna also has free will to bless us, grace us, or not. So he might test us by not giving us his grace, and most of the time is to increase our desire. I mean, Krishna is not giving his grace or sanction to, you know, put us down or just, you know, discourage us and make us feel bad. I mean, Krishna is all good, so. But he has that free will also, that he can, you know, give his sanction or not, for whatever reasons, either to increase our desire or to teach us a lesson or to do whatever he wants. As Lord Chaitanya says in the Shikshastakam, you know, you can embrace me or you can make me feel broken hearted. Krishna has that free will. Like we have free will, he also has free will. Otherwise, if something is lacking, if Krishna has to do this, or if we have to do, like, love him or serve him, you know, there's an element of free will. It's very minute, because, you know, we can just, you know, desire, as you say, and then the rest we have to depend on material nature and Krishna, and so we have to depend on so many things.
You mentioned the end of your class then. As a person is advancing in spiritual life, and then his material life remains the background, and his spiritual life is more important than the performance life. But is it not that as a person is advancing in spiritual life, his material life is not material anymore, it's spiritualized? So then whatever activities it performs, even for the basic necessities of life, whatever it is, then they're all spiritualized.
Yeah, in one sense, yeah. I was referring to more like one one has certain obligations, you know, some obligations in this world, and as you know, if one becomes older and more wise, many of these obligations they diminish, especially in relation to family. I was referring to family, to family life, and like that. And then one has more time for service, for sadhana, for spiritual activities, and like that. I mean, there's different ways of seeing it. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanande ki jai.